Okay, we're back for episode 108 of Powers and Principalities. Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. How are you doing? I guess it's sort of a dramatic week for Powers and Principalities, as evidently we have left YouTube. Can you give a description as to actually what took place and what the future will hold for our show?
Well, I'm no longer using YouTube as a platform for the show, meaning I'm not going to post entire shows on there. I'm just going to use it sort of as a promotion board. And I'll provide links to other platforms like Vimeo, Podomatic, and also not Podbean, what's the other one?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many.
Yeah, basically I'll use YouTube, the show title, so people will know, they can click on it below. They have a link to it, to either to go to the platform of Podomatic, or to see the video type, you know, like they would watch it on YouTube. You can watch it on Vimeo. I'll upload the entire video to that platform for the time being.
And does this affect subscribers to the show?
Well, I guess they'll get the, you know, that like the 2 minute intro, and so they'll know that the show comes out, so then they can link that, they can just use YouTube and link, I'll provide the link on the YouTube page to the other platforms that are, you know, that I'm putting the entire interviews on, which is Vimeo and Podomatic.
A lot of people have enjoyed the comments that YouTube makes possible. What's going to happen to the, you know, like the ability to make comments and to talk back and forth, you know, people who are like watching the or listening to the show?
Well, from what I can tell, is you can still comment on it on the YouTube page. The only time they restrict the comment is when, you know, the video gets restricted. Either, you know, obviously, if it gets pulled off, or it's put in a restrictive mode where comments are no longer possible.
Yeah, what about on the other platforms? Can they comment on those?
Yeah, each one of those has a Vimeo, has an area you can comment on, and so does Podomatic.
Okay. Well,
I just don't want to worry about what I say, so I'm not going to.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of irritating, isn't it, to think about basically having to please them. In our discussions, it's just obviously censorship, and so this is a good idea. This is a good workaround, in my opinion, and it hopefully will take some traffic away from YouTube and just get people more comfortable about using other platforms. Let's hope the other platforms hold up in terms of the First Amendment.
Yeah, I'm sure if another platform gets too popular, it'll be absorbed into the Borg. The same way YouTube was back in 10 years ago when Google.
Yeah, well, we'll always have to stay on the fringe. I mean, this is the battle is pretty clear, isn't it? I mean, the Borg, as you call it, the Google, YouTube, NSA monster, will try to absorb everything that it can identify, but hopefully there'll be creativity, you know, on the fringe. Mm-hmm. Where people will continue to come up with different ways of having real discussions and exchanging real information, that will always be one step ahead of whatever they try to do in terms of shutting us down.
Yeah, that's the only way you can go about doing it, you know, because, you know, it's not as if they're going to, you know, play fair.
No, I don't think so. They're not about equality of opportunity, are they?
No, they're not into it. They don't want a level playing field. They don't want equality.
Yeah, and it's funny because they advocate this basically a cult of equality, don't they? Their political perspective, this is what we were going to talk about, with the 4th of July coming up and the Constitution, and our situation where our First Amendment rights have been diminished and attacked. However, this isn't the first time that the oligarchs have struck. I mean, look at, for example, affirmative action, which is also, an attack on some of the principles of freedom, free association, freedom of marketplace that are implicit in the Constitution. And so we're now facing, the First Amendment as, the battleground area. But there's been many other attacks on freedom. And one of the kind of insidious things that they do is they roll out the cult of equality. The concept of equality is almost a religious perspective. So, what do you, how do you comment on that? What do you think?
Well, the cult of equality is sort of it's kind of built into the American system. Obviously, go back to the Declaration of Independence, that was supposedly penned by Thomas Jefferson, although some people think it was Thomas Paine. That's a whole nother debate. But he wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights." That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Of course, this idea has been abused, misused, the phrase of it, the phrase of equality, or at least right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You take it out of its context, it can be very easily abused. There are many ideas of equality, many understandings of equality. It's First, you have like John Locke, right? John Locke's idea of equality, which more or less applied, like the idea of free men, and it was kind of support, I guess, like good dates back to the Scottish common sense school of philosophy. It held that man has that no man has a natural or God-given right to rule over another person. This was an assault on sort of the idea of hierarchy and particularly monarchs or kings. And so it said that basically there's no inherent right to rule over another. And that was rather radical for its time, and it's also destabilizing. Maybe that's why that cause was taken up by Freemasonry. You have another idea of equality. It's the idea of a blank slate or tabula rasa, which is kind of mystical. The idea that all men are born free. And then they in civilization and chains, and this is sort of the Rousseauian vision. Then you have another idea of equality is sort of morality. All men are moral equals. And this is, of course, this is part of a religious belief, particularly Christianity, where we're all equal before God. We're all, that isn't quite as radical, nor is it as, I guess, easily to abuse and to apply to social engineering. You have other ideas of equality. Then you have sort of the notion that basically that all equal before the law, which is more palatable for most people. But then you have the idea of equality where basically we're all equal, and an absence of coercion or absence of some sort of systematic discrimination or violence. We'll all be equal, and if there's any privilege or if there's any success or difference of outcome in society, it must be a product of some sort of injustice. And that's where we are today, in many respects, in the United States, where this idea to try to level everything out, and we obviously, when you live in particularly in a diverse or multicultural society, you can have all types of different outcomes, because groups are different, groups are as different as individuals. And so results aren't going to be the same. And so this particularly became a problem in America in the 20th century, and after World War II, with the Civil Rights Revolution, Civil Rights Era, when legal impediments such as Jim Crow in the South and also in the North were removed. And so basically you had the passage of, you know, things like the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the outlawing of explicit racial discrimination, and the problems that arose from trying to enforce those laws, because within society you can have all types of, you know, commercial, economic, and also sort of social interactions where people may want to discriminate for any number of reasons. And so the law tried to sort of do away with that, with laws against discrimination in employment. You had laws against, like, covenants, housing. I think it was the Parker decision, which forbade courts from enforcing covenants in regards to race and neighborhoods and these things. And you had Equal Housing Act. You had the Voting Rights Act and these things. And so it became much more problematic, as particularly as the U.S. government and the federal laws tried to, enfranchise America's minority black population. And it just wasn't just because of inequality, there wasn't just a simple matter of passing laws, because you had profound inequality between the groups, some a lot, much, you could say, because of discrimination, others just because of conditions. And in the 1960s and 70s, what you had was a sort of a trend to try to equalize everything, and hence you got affirmative action, set asides, quotas, and these things. And so bringing about equality isn't as simple as it sounds, and it inherently requires social engineering and coercion, because at the end of the day, people and groups aren't equal; they're different, and they're always going to have different results, no matter what you do. So that's sort of a off the cuff comment on notions of equality here in the United States.
Yeah, I mean that is actually, and I have a question. So the people that basically are trying to enforce the cult of equality, you know, you can see like Nancy Pelosi and the Clintons and long list. But I'm just going to ask you: have you ever seen one of that group like give up their wealth or their power in order to like basically help the idea of equality in the country?
Well, they're good at spending other people's money, that's for sure. I mean, very generous to other people's.
it is so sad. I mean, this is just the whole idea about equality. We, you know, we'll go into some of the specifics of it all and how it is, particularly as it applies to race and gender. But I just wanted to, you know, like give like the 10,000 foot view of the thing. I was thinking about, well, equality. It's sort of like, okay, so at the beginning of the Kubrick's movie 2001, you have a bunch of apes that get beat up, and then they go and they figure out that if they use tools like bones, they can beat the brains out of the other apes. And so then they go and do it, and then lo and behold, you see the monolith, right?
Yeah.
Now, what this is pretty simple. As you can see, the monolith is engineering, it's technology, it's the tectons, if you will, you know, the Masonic builders. This is the idea that they're building things, right? But my point is that the battle between the apes was not an example of the cult of equality. The apes did not... who had the weapons did not try to like negotiate a peace, but rather they tried to destroy. And so I would suggest that the cult of equality is just like the bone that was used as a weapon. It's just that it's you know, something that helps hide the fact that one group is just absolutely determined, you know, to rule the world and get everybody else off the planet. And so, okay, so that was kind of like so that's the concept, right, of this idea of the, you know, and so I wanted to give like an actual example, which we've actually covered, but I thought, you know, listeners will get a kick out of it. Star Spangled Banner. Okay, so you know, it's like this idea of like free people and everything. But if you actually look at what Keyes is writing, Big Mason, he goes, you know, and where is that band? This is in the second stanza. Who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and the battle's confusion, a home and a country should leave us no more. Their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave. And then he goes on. So he goes, you know, or the land of the free and the home of the brave. That's the line right after this. Oh, thus it be ever where freemen shall stand. But you see, my point is, see, the cult of equality is not really in the expression here, because he's talking about freedom and the freemen will stand and the victory and stuff. But that's because they have destroyed the hireling and the slave, you see. So this is the thing. And then he goes on and he, you know, he says, and this be our motto and God is our trust, which is, you know, a line from a Masonic initiation. And so the thing is that here is the idea of free man as a group, but they're standing on top of the bodies of these other individuals. So I think even though this kind of may seem oblique, I hope the point can become clear to our listeners that, that the cult of equality is the attempt not to move us into the group of free men, right? This is not what they're trying to do. This is trying to make us be part of the hireling and slave group, right? You see, they're not with this psychological approach. They're not in any way attempting to create a world where their power and their wealth and their weapons are given up. This would be just like, you know, the rhetorical question about have the Clintons or Nancy Pelosi or any of the politically correct class ever, even one of them ever, like, abandoned their wealth, you know, to and lived a life of Mother Teresa because they're so committed to the principles, right? But they're committed to the principles of applying this concept into society, and this is because it has a destructive effect upon the power of the people inside it that they're going to control. So when you have the cult of equality, first of all, you get, you know, I mean, like, we've had affirmative action now in the country for how long? Like almost 50 years, I think, right?
Yeah, late 60s.
And is life better in the inner city, which was supposed to, you know, I mean, is anyone like going to try to make that argument? I know there'll be people who say, well, look at all of like the minorities and women who are in business. But that's not the question. The question is life better? And I mean, to that question, I think we can answer, you just drive down, you know, like the main street of Chicago or Los Angeles or any of these cities that have been so much affected by this legal principle, the lives are miserable for these individuals. And moreover, the political situation is getting worse and worse. By that, I mean, they are more and more in need of government. You see, this is really what, to me, when you have the cult of equality, the real kind of semantical trick is that people don't recognize that the cult of equality doesn't mean that Nancy Pelosi is going to give up her helicopter. You know, what it means is that Nancy Pelosi is going to retain her power and everyone else will have a single class consciousness that will be able to be dominated.
Yeah. It's the same way, like in the Soviet Union, you had everyone was equal except for the so-called nomenclatura. You know, party elite, and there's no greater example of inequality than like in the workers' paradise. Whereas in the United States, perhaps in the 20th century, you had probably with the broad prosperity, you had the closest approximation to equality. It just wasn't based on some sort of ideology, just how things played out because of the way the economy was structured at that given moment. You had the broad middle class. And the quality of life was very high for many people. It didn't say there weren't problems, but yeah, you could take a photograph of urban life in 1950, you compare it to 2019, and yeah, how people were better mannered, better dressed, and you know, their everyday habits were healthier than today.
Just look at the broad demographic statistics. I mean, You take the African American as a class before the class consciousness cult of equality was applied legally through, you know, different structures. They were moving demographically in a positive direction everywhere. I mean, and I actually was in Watts, and I forget, you know, maybe 58, mm-hmm. 59. It was on the uptick, no question. It was on the uptick. You could just sense it. Even as a kid, and particularly the vernacular, they were adopting, you know, because there had been an influx into the cities. E. Michael Jones points out from like the first part of the 20th century, and a lot of these people were almost came from, you know, generations of non-educated mm-hmm. slave classes. So now they are in the city, they can't write, they can't read, they can't do arithmetic. They're obviously, you know, as a culture, they're in, you know, they're just nowhere because of the effects of slavery. And then everything starts to improve. And then when you get to Watts in 1957, I'd love to have like some video of this. If I'm going to try to find some, then you can see, well, wait a second, they're starting to basically organize themselves and create civilization. And if this process goes forward, they're going to be a difficult group to control. It's pretty obvious, right? So now you have these you know, social programs which are supposed to help them, and they absolutely crush this culture, and they're going to crush all of the cultures eventually, right? And so you can just trace this almost like one of those stop motion films, you know, of everything from like the moment when the Great Society program hits to today is just complete, you know, just catastrophic. And yet all of it, every day, they're being told that there are programs in place to help create more equality, equality between you and the, you know, white male dominated exterior culture, right? But you'll see that we're making progress. But in fact, their ethnicity is being evaporated, right? Their birth rate now is getting less than replicant. They're being force-fed, you know, integrated marriage, right? Mm-hmm. Which is obviously going, you know, just a step away from, I think, what they wanted in the 50s. And the most important part is, and this is the thing about, you know, class consciousness and the cult of equality that is so dangerous, is that the government has to take care of the children, right? So there is where you get where the cult of equality, in my opinion, really like becomes fully realized.
Yes, yeah, so we get equality between men and women, which is much more problematic between equality between the sexes, because I think whatever differences there are between different ethnic groups or racial groups, between the men of those groups, the differences between men and women are much more profound and meaningful. But nevertheless, you have this push to equalize, you know, income between men and women, meaning that men and women are going to be equally wage slaves. And that does raise the question, who raises the kids? Well, in one form or another, the state does, the schools, the kids are then warehoused, or the entertainment system, you know, TV or the internet will raise them, because that's where they'll spend their last year kids will spend their time, because they won't have an adult at home in these things. And so, again, in the pursuit of equality, you'd expect it would destroy the necessary hierarchies that allow for, you know, human and societal, you know, development and flourishing. Things like the family, which is not equal. It's very, you know, patriarchal in its proper understanding, and it's not democratic in any sense. And there's no pretext of equality between the members of the family. There's the, you know, the mother, the father, and the children. And so that's, it's been very destructive. I mean, if you look at the pursuit for equality, a while back we did a show on the 19th Amendment, and I made the point that just when America was adopting a covert government with secretive spy agencies, a cryptocracy, voting They were expanding the franchise. Voting became even more important. They were pushing everyone should vote, vote, as the government becomes more secretive. Well, just as the government, so American society has become more oligarchic, we hear nothing, we hear more and more about equality. You know, exactly. In the same way that we talk about global equality, we hear economists that talk about how global trade is there to equalize everything throughout the world. And of course, what that means is that that's the impoverishment and deindustrialization of the United States and the immiseration or the impoverishment of the American people, particularly the former working class in these things. So this promises of equality, it's a false promise, of course, because at the same time, bring about this idea of equality, they have to destroy, voluntary associations, things like the family, even employment, or communities. And the community itself is, in a way, sort of undemocratic because a community is going to exclude certain groups. And you're going to have some basis for that community. That community is usually it's going to fall down along, you know, ethno or religious lines. And again, everything can't be equal in those relationships, and so those had to be destroyed. So to chase this illusory equality, where we end up destroying the important institutions that we need to have of a community and flourish as individuals. And again, it's a hoodwink and a trick, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at this recent, it's not that recent, they've used this, they've applied this technique for a long time, but recently it's becoming more and more blatant, where they would give different classes of people longer time to take exams than like white males, for example. So women would get longer to take math and, like Latinos would get longer to do English tests and things. And, you know, so the idea is that these gatekeeper exams can be modified to produce an equal society, right? But obviously this is simply, you know, an illusion, because they wouldn't need to do these techniques if there was actual equality of technique, mm-hmm. right? It's the whole reason that they have to do it. And so... and now, what does this really do in terms of like the social kind of fabric going forward? If you have people on the basis of gender and race who have been systematically basically given additional scores in order to, for example, say, become a lawyer or God help us, you know, like a civil engineer. Has the stigma that, you know, that was associated with their lack of technique been removed by this government program? So of course not. What does that really do? It just creates more tension. You see, I think that these things, the tension that, you know, the cult of equality creates is just one of these dialectics that's designed to basically make us hate each other. The men who are, you know, affirmative action is, you know, it just is, now it's just a way of life, but how many white males really aren't hostile toward it, right?
Yeah.
Because they know this is just, you know, racial discrimination against them. So whatever, you know, the long-term kind of moral structure of the thing is, it is adding to basically, you know, the tension between groups right now, instead of there being like this, you know, kind of a natural process by which one ethnicity can blossom, right, and become basically able to do, you know, all of these technical things that other groups were doing for it. That's never going to occur. You know, it just is never going to occur here in our country, because at the same time that they have, you know, they have giving more time on tests, they're also making sure that there are no husbands and families, right?
Yeah.
So the whole thing just ends up in a society where people can't really raise children, And the state is always there. And then who is the state? Well, the state is, you know, the group that is deliberately placing these techniques into our world for the purpose of atomizing us and making us easier to control.
There is a headline I read. Black Latino enrollment in U.S. colleges is almost double what it would be on merit alone. Okay. Yeah. Researchers wondered what the nation's most selective colleges and universities would look like if they admitted students solely on the basis of SAT scores. Their answer, campuses would be wealthier, whiter, and more male. Horror of horrors, we know, but there's no arguing that the data from the Georgetown University study, as the Wall Street Journal reports, rather shockingly to many, more than half the students now enrolled at the top 200 colleges and universities would lose their seats to students who perform better on the SAT. The result, as the chart below shows, is that Black and Latino students would be worse affected, with enrollments cut nearly in half to 11% of all students from 19%. The share of Asian students would slip from 10% to 10% from 11%. The principal winners were wealthy white male students whose ranks would increase, but a large number of white students would lose their seats and be replaced with other white students.
Yeah, because they give if you come in as a white with and you claim poverty.
Yeah.
Then you're given extra.
Well, don't they have adversity scores now?
Adversity scores, yeah.
So now it just goes by like a zip code or something?
Yeah.
All
I can say is that to those white males that weren't let into the universities because of the.
Oh, yeah.
You're just so much better off, and you're actually, they're just inviting you to save the money. I would send a letter of gratitude to.
Yeah, there is.
Because if you hadn't like illegally excluded me, I would have gone in there and studied cultural Marxism for 4 years and wasted $250,000, and I would have been a debt slave with a degree in gender studies and a $250,000 debt on compound interest that I can't even go BK on. So I'm just completely crushed and ruined. And this kind of reminds me of like. We had that show on the movie stars that were trying to get their kids into SC by the bribery, and we said, look, they should recognize that the school is the cesspool that they wouldn't want their kids in just by the fact that they're taking bribes to let them in, right? This should be in their first clue about where they were sending their kids. So, there's a kind of almost absurdity to all this, at the end of the day, what I hope happens is that that instead of fighting against affirmative action, and I wanted just to talk about fighting against it in a second, but what I think it should do is that people who are excluded and people who are accepted as well. I mean, it's harder for them, I know, because they're thinking, gee, it's working out great for me. But to wonder if the institution isn't just completely rotten, and this is just exposing that, and so like really, what is the point of even attending?
Well, get radical, get to the root of the problem. But if you look at something like trying to enforce equality, I was listening to a speech by Shelby Steele. This was a while back, and he was talking about Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. And Shelby Steele is a conservative, black commentator, and he was talking about what happened in the 1960s. It was sort of the end of segregation in the South and throughout the country, but it was primarily focused on the South, where in the North it wasn't legal, it was more by custom. But when that ended, regardless, you could do away with these laws, discriminatory laws. Nevertheless, you're still going to have inequality because, if you grew up and your father was a janitor, you're not going to be as competitive as the kid who grew up with the father's a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer. It's just something that's going to happen overnight. It may not happen over several generations. And that's a hard thing to accept, especially if you're told that you're a victim and you got something coming to you, which is what they've been saying for decades now. And again, if you do that, you know, if you tell someone's a victim, and because he's a victim, he's got something coming to him. He'll never renounce being a victim because he'll lose, you know, whatever benefits he thinks he gets. He gets, you know, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, Equal Employment Act, and these things. There's nothing in the law that called for affirmative action or quotas. In fact, explicit promises were made that the law would not produce these things. As people who read the law realized that the only way that you can pass laws, explicit laws against employment discrimination, these things, because no one is going to say, I'm not hiring you because you're black. They just won't hire you. Inevitably, they would have to resort to statistical disparity, which they did. And that became a prima facie case for racial discrimination. So if you, you know, if you have a factory and the people who work in the factory, the demographics in the factory don't match the demographics of the surrounding area, however wide, because they decide to determine what the surrounding area is, you can be brought up on discrimination charges and lose, because that disparity itself is proof of you violating the act. So companies would resort to quotas and racial set-asides just to cover themselves. It was inevitable. Same thing in federal contracting. You're the Office of Contract Office of Compliance, you know, in the Justice Department and various agencies, and any company that's doing contracting with the federal government has to prove they comply. The only way they comply is through racial set-asides and affirmative action. So it was inevitable, you know, that this stuff was going to happen, because what they're trying to do with the law was do something that really wasn't possible. You're trying to force people together. And the same thing with the Fair Housing Act. The Fair Housing Act was just a ruse to destroy ethnic, community-based neighborhoods in the name of integration. We've talked about that. I don't need to repeat that story. You know, so the ability to communities to maintain their integrity and protect themselves was destroyed by the federal government. So you had, you know, people dispersing into suburbia, you had atomization, people's, you know, so the spiritual or existential crisis that they're having now is largely a function of that, because they have no identity anymore. They're denied that identity because to have an ethnic identity is to discriminate, which is illegal. So again, it's just one of these things where it's one of these utopian sounding utopian ideas, which just leads to destruction and it's catastrophic. So it's, again, it's just something that requires more thought. It's not just as simple as just everyone getting along and treating everyone equally. It's more complicated than that.
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing is going to get the public to be aware that the struggle that they're engaged in, say, on either side of affirmative action, is irrelevant and distracting to the real problem, which is that the oligarchs, who are this hidden hand shaping culture, have deliberately created this competition, mm-hmm. so that there will be hatred, there will be atomization. There won't be a unification of, like, the black males and women who got in because of affirmative action and the white males who didn't, with both of them realizing that they were victims of the same group. Mm-hmm. See, this is really what we have to head toward.
Oh, it's like in the busing controversies of the 1970s, like in Boston, where the Southies were throwing bricks at the black students coming to their schools, or, you know, and yeah. Vice versa. You want to go for the immediate enemy, but again, there were pawns in the game. In the name of equality, the federal judges ruled that a kid would have to get up at 4:30 in the morning to drive a bus 2 hours to attend a school 2 hours away, just to meet some sort of standard set by bureaucrats and judges. And what was that doing? They're destroying any type of local support for their school, any local governance and accountability, in the name of because these social engineers had some notion of what equality should be. Everyone should integrate. You know, but by whose authority? You know, whose authority?
Well, you know. Exactly. They were always just trying to do mischief and to destroy basically the vitality of the people that they were going to enslave. I mean, look, if they were at all serious about the idea of equality or rate, for example, raising up like the black people, right? They always, you know, you get to see like the Martin Luther King in Selma when he's got like one of the members of the Schiff family marching with him. You know, it's like, Right. Yeah. Well, weren't you guys promoting like slavery a generation ago? So the thing is that the hard thing is going to get people to stop fighting about the effects of the attack and to start realizing that there was an attack. You see, this is really going to be a hard thing to do because people's egos are so invested in their identity. Like, look at all of the women coming out of the cultural Marxist universities. You know, a lot of them have been so infected with the feminist model as their persona that they will never understand, or it'd be very hard for them to think that the creation of their personality was actually
Hey
a
Joe,
way designed to destroy them. Yeah.
let me check something real fast. Okay, we're back. It's a technical difficulty. I'm sorry.
Wow. Well, these things happen. So I was saying that a really hard thing is going to be getting people, you know, particularly those that are benefiting, you know, from the pressure of affirmative action into the culture, the ones who are benefiting from it, to see that they are actually the victims of an attack. You know, that is going to be an analytic task because they have self-identified with particularly the victimization concept. You know, they're and the idea of like the white male privilege. This idea is like floating out there, even though you know, the white male, the average Joe, to use the expression, has had like a 200-year nightmare where there has been no political power or any privilege whatsoever, and we've been mowed down by automatic weapons, usually manned by one of our own type, who was under the command of some other Mason on another with another uniform on. And so, but this concept has been sold, right? And very technically, if you listen to like feminists, you know, women who come out of university, they have these very technical ways of describing kind of you know, male-dominated history, and yet none of them ever bring out the idea that, well, maybe one little small group was organizing all this. See, this is the information revolution. It's right here, Tim. This is the information revolution that I hope happens, is that people will make that step into thinking, well, it wasn't, you know, this isn't just history unfolding. This wasn't just a general bad behavior by white males. This was a very specific organization that hated white males, or a lot of them, and certainly had nothing good in mind for women or minorities. You see, this is going to be the trick to get
Yeah,
them
they're
to
always
make
just
that.
they're proxies.
Yeah.
A lot of our talk is focused on your equality, especially in terms of the racial issue, the racial question, and black versus white. Of course, there's a lot, the country's a lot more diverse than that now. So now we have, Hispanic, and now we have people from East or Southern Asia, these things. And but it's still the if you look at between men and women, where feminism itself was supposedly started, equity feminists to start to bring out equality between the sexes. Well, no one stopped to think if that was a good thing or not. But it's interesting to say that feminism, which started sort of from the leftist critique, it grew out of Marxism. But basically, it applied Marxist, theory to relations between the sexes instead of class theory. It was, the two sexes. But just like in anything, because just like most things, it's a false left-right paradigm, is that pretty soon feminism, once it was, I guess, not embraced, but much of it internalized by the broader culture through a couple of decades of indoctrination and propaganda. And this is also goes to sort of the larger macroeconomic environment, which made it impossible for the single male wage earner to raise a family. No fault divorce. So a lot of women sort of internalize a lot of presumptions of feminism, having a career, independent in these things, not depending on a man, as they say. Feminism now utilized by capitalism to double the labor market increased the size of the labor market to drive down wages, and now women have become equal wage slaves to men. But it's largely a capitalist enterprise, and this stuff. Feminism now is supported by capitalism as women pursue their careers, as they say. They have to go out and work, and they can't devote their 20s and 30s to raising children at home, you know, because they're not, they're marrying at a much lower rate, or they can't, you know, or they're divorced, or they never got married, or whoever they're married to can't earn enough because of inflation, debt, taxes, and suppressing wages.
Yeah, they're dealing with like males who have like lost 60% of their sperm count.
Yeah.
You know, and so they're not even like they're metrosexual so often. And so it's hard even to find, you know, a male on that level, you know,
because which leads to the sort of the gender confusion, and sexual confusion you see out there so much. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the culture has really been trashed, and the way, and well, it's being genocided. It's not the correct term. It's being genocided. It's an organized project. All of these elements are moving, you know, us into a situation where the state will produce the children. It will basically become responsible for the production of the children and then the education. And Huxley will have been amazingly prescient, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Just incredible how he could have looked into the future and seen what exactly was going to happen. And so,
well, Huxley's Brave New World is much more prescient than 1984. Perhaps Huxley was better connected than George Orwell.
I can show you an amazing citation about Huxley by someone who was at a party with him. It was at the Rothschild's house, and Huxley was there. And the guy said, "You know," I said, "it was really amazing to listen to all this talk because he would just talk in these broad strokes about what was going to happen to humanity and how it would move about, just like the, you know, that there were, you know, like he was dealing with, you know, soldiers, little toy soldiers on a tabletop."
Mm-hmm.
He and the Rothschilds were having this lovely conversation, and so, you know, when you look at Brave New World, it's just this book really should be paid attention to. I mean, that is where we're headed, and that's why, you know, when you look at the cult of equality, which is being promoted as a workers' paradise, you know, once again we're going to have this great future because there'll be equality. There'll be equality, all right, but that's the upside. The downside is we'll all be slaves.
Yeah.
You know, we're not being invited into the group that Keyes was singing about, the, you know, the freemen, the people who are controlling the weapons, and then we're blowing up, all of the hireling and slaves. I mean, isn't it clear where we're headed? I just the idea that, you know, as you point out, that government becomes more and more secretive. That technology of snooping and identifying where we are and what we're doing is becoming more and more sophisticated. Is this the attributes of like freedom in a brave new world where workers' paradise has actually come to pass? Aren't these attributes of a slave state, right? Where the hell, you know, why do you think that this is coming about? This isn't. You know, I mean, you know, they have these occasional, false flag events to like make the public worried. But this is just the construction of a technologic slave state that
look at something like the federal income tax was supposed to be a tax to bring about equality, graduated income in these graduated income tax. Well, you know, the super wealthy don't pay any income tax. It's the higher wage earners that get really nailed in these things, and then the lower wage earners get hit with payroll taxes, you know, not to mention the inflation tax. You talk about the greatest force of inequality. That, you know, we'll talk about equality of the sexes and the equality between, you know, black and white, but no one, you know, looks at something like the Federal Reserve and what it does with its monetary shenanigans.
Exactly. If people wanted to like help poor people, the idea of a welfare check to women without a husband wouldn't really be the first thing to come to mind. How about just a little bit of equality in terms of access to credit?
Yeah, or like
production credit, creation of credit.
When I get paid a dollar, it's worth the same amount as when someone higher up the food chain gets the dollar. You know, by the time it trickles down to the wage earners, the dollar, you know, the money's been devalued because of the inflation.
Well, the thing is, the money comes into our system through credit. Credit doesn't cost anything. They just have the power of the production of credit, and they can charge to their tribe 0.25% at the discount window, and then pass it on to us at 3.5%, and we are their, you know, compound interest slaves. We don't even understand it, you know. So then, and of course, we're getting poorer every single year. No one can fight against the power of compound interest. It's literally physically impossible. It's trying to, like, always trying to swim upstream. Eventually, you just become exhausted and drown. You know, you can't get ahead. You can't create a lot of equity. I mean, people have like, they've had to refinance their homes to pay for the cultural Marxist university. And they end up, after paying compound interest for 30 years, with the same size mortgage.
Well, that's been the swindle ever since. I mean, that's it's a hard pill to swallow. But America was founded on a bond swindle.
Yeah.
So all this talk about equality, I'm talking about the assumption of the debt by the federal government. This was Hamilton's deal with Governor Morris, and how he able to buy out the bonds pennies on the dollar, knowing that they'd be made good and full with gold by the federal government, by the law, you know, by the excise taxes that would spark the whiskey rebellion. But, you know, the notion you can all high flute and talk about equality when these insiders are making these deals, this is at the founding of the country that they were going to, you know, get fabulously wealthy. And so what is equality, this notion of equality? I mean, we have that going on. Come on.
Right. And they're just used to lying their heads off. And that's why I think the Star Spangled Banner is actually a very appropriate song to play at the beginning of football games in the NFL, because, you know, they just don't sing the right stanza. You know, if they would just sing the right stanza, then they could sing that no refuge can save the hireling and slave from the terror of night or the gloom of the grave, and the Star Spangled Banner and triumph of wave, or the land of the free and the home of the brave. But the land of the free and the home of the brave is the land of Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi. These guys are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, which of course is also sort of absurd, because they can be worth hundreds of trillions of dollars. They can just be worth anything they want, because since they own the Federal Reserve, the wealth that they present is just, you know, a window dressing. But it just, the fact that they don't dispense any of this wealth to poor people, I think, is clearly, you know, it shows that there is hypocrisy, if nothing else. And and it also shows that they don't, you know, that they're never going to create any, that the equality that they're talking about, the cult of equality, is when basically you are all autistic. That is the where it's like Gregor Lukacs's, you know, his when he would take the children and, you know, give them fairy tales about animals, and they would start to lose their human identity. And he would say, this is the greatest thing. They're not even human anymore. They're becoming like animals. Well, now we have technologic methods of, like, producing this, you know. And so we're damaging the intellectual power of the population, because that is going to make a lot of hireling and slaves. Mm-hmm. See, this is where we're headed. It irritates me, Tim, that we can't get the information revolution occurring faster. And I hope that everyone who listens to the show and just, you know, and we talk about the cult of equality, can, you know, don't be intimidated. For heaven's sakes, this is the time when you have to be courageous. This is when you have to speak up. Groups to be talking about these things, know your facts, and try to make them understand that there is a difference, you see, between the hireling and slave and the land of the free. The land of the free is the land of the free money and the people who own the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. The hireling slaves are the people who have to buy their credit. And we're not, with the cult of equality, we're just making sure that there are no powerful or strong hireling or slaves, so that then the land of the free has no trouble controlling it, right? So this is kind of, you know, there it is. It's just the process is visible. I think we've done a good job of exposing it, and we'll continue to. But the people need to respond by the information revolution. They just have to get the information out. And so one thing I would, you know, if these ideas are resonating, make sure if you like the show that you find ways to replicate it within the internet. I mean, you know, you can see that Tim is making it available on the different platforms. We use the platforms, right? These are, I mean, of course, like Tim says, the platforms will eventually be absorbed. But right now, we can put out a show like this and have it posted on those platforms, and it's not taken down. So this, we can see that these are freer platforms. These are platforms that we can get the information out at the moment. Let's take advantage of it.
Yeah, make them bare their teeth, at least.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's like... you know, like I get a lot of that. People ask me, well, you know, what do you think about that? Are you worried? And I say, well, you know, I want them to behave like that. That's the only way I can know that we're having the effect we need to have.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. If you're doing, if you have a show on YouTube and the shows aren't being removed at this point, you're probably not saying much.
Well, and if you're an alt media personality and you're not being removed, it means that you're probably a double agent. But even if you have been removed, it doesn't mean you aren't. I mean, people need to always vet the information that people are given mm-hmm. with capacity to reason. And you see, you know, the cult of equality kind of depends on no capacity for individual thought, doesn't it, Tim?
Yeah, that's the way everyone's equal, because people have different intellectual capacities and physical capacities, and they'll come to these things, you know, quicker than other people, and those people then are there to provide some sort of guidance or leadership, and that's not equal.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know? And so this is the freedom that we need to, like, go forward and live a life that, you know, isn't part of the slave state. And so the cult of equality, I hope, is exposed, you know, as a distracting and destructive dialectic.
Well, can anything so ridiculous as you should expect that men and women should have the same, like, equality when it comes to employment? That's ridiculous, considering the functions that they serve, you know. Obviously, women will work at some point, but, you know, certain times of their lives, they're going to work a lot less because they're rearing, you know, they're giving birth and raising children. And that's a good thing. And so it's going to show differences in income, workforce participation and such. But the presumption that somehow this should be equal participation is ridiculous, because it denies the fundamental differences between the sexes and how they don't compete with one another. They complement one another. The way the system's designed with equality is you have to competing with one another. And what does that produce?
Well, it produces non-families and the state in charge of the production of children. You know, and so...
I made this point a while back, how that, you know, a lot of feminists will say, we don't have the choice of these things. The choice, you know, as if men have ever had a choice. But anyway, the choice of having a career, having a family, perhaps having both. You can do it all. Bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, that sort of thing. But I'm saying, that's fine, you can have it all. That's not really possible. But the point is, the reality is, the society they've created is that women don't even have that choice. Because, like you said, how many men are even, you know, good material at this point? How many young men? Look at the marriage rate. It's like I think it's only a quarter of people in age 30 are married. Or it used to be well over 50% as recently as, like, the mid-70s. So if a woman wants to assume a more traditional role and, you know, devote her time to raising the kids while her husband supports the family, one thing is, it's hard for her to find a guy out there who's capable or willing to do that, because he himself has internalized so much of the toxic culture, or the broader economy has been twisted and manipulated to the point where it's harder to find someone who has an income that can provide that much support. And you need an economy that allows the father to earn enough money to raise a family, because other than that, society's not sustainable.
You know? Well, that's exactly right, and somehow that's camouflaged behind this brilliant light of the cult of equality.
Yeah,
you know, that that people don't ask these basic questions of like, well, where does the culture that the feminists have created go? Do they really think they're going to like, is it generative? In other words, you're actually, yeah. Do you really think that this culture is going to produce enough children that you can have another generation that they are going to end up being like proto-feminists, and then there'll be four generations where there'll be the workers' paradise? This is just ridiculous. What they're doing is they're just genociding themselves. They're having no children at all. The current model of feminism has maybe 1.5 generations of lifespan possible, mm-hmm. because you can't follow through with the thing since there's no, I mean, no one is, I mean, I just, you know, it's like when you look at like some of the more like kind of, you know, I don't know what word to like describe them with, because they have this sort of feminist jargon, you know, that they've developed with lots of little terms and kind of interesting ways of looking at history and things. And you look at these women and you go, man, there's just no, I mean, that woman will never get a husband in her entire life. There's no question about it. And is that even, you know, an issue to her? And then probably she would say no, and she would resist that idea of being an important thing. And then you would say, well, wait a second. So the basic biologic purpose of
yes.
of mammals is not in your little intellectual equation. You're rejecting it, and you think that this is some kind of coherent philosophy for people to follow? Really? I mean, this is just, you see what I mean? It's just it's sort of like when Marcuse was trying to promote the hippies with, you know, like the you know, Eros and Civilization, mm-hmm. where he, you know, with the authoritarian personality, chapter 23 stuff. And you couldn't resist at the time because you go, well, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll and freedom of all this stuff, good idea. But now you've got like the 68-year-old pornographic man.
Yes. When you're 21 years old, yeah.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. And I think that I'm afraid to say it, but I think that the feminists are kind of in the same position. They now have a very developed intellectual structure, but where does this take them? It takes them into like they have like drum clubs for like women in their 70s, you know, to like beat drums and have drum circles. And
well, yeah, so that, I mean, that this sort of a feminine thing is they get a bunch of miserable women together and they'll talk about how evil the world is, how bad men are, right?
But that's, you know, the thing is, but at the same time, I've actually been in like cultures that I think are like more generative, healthier, mm-hmm. and women often are like, will just associate by themselves for periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't sit around and just hate on their existence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have useful and fun stuff that they're able to do.
Well, they're like, fulfilled, and the way the system is designed now, you know, is to get women out, go to college or get out in the workforce, and where some corporation can extract every erg of, you know, energy or labor from the woman, then leave her, you know, an empty husk at the end of a career. And compare that to a woman who has a family and has children and grandkids as a legacy, you know.
They graduated from Harvard Law and then worked as an affirmative action employee for AT&T.
Yeah, yeah.
For 40 years until she committed suicide. I mean.
Well, yeah, killed herself on boxed wine and Xanax.
Yeah, I mean, it is just so sad. And it just shows you how human. Oh man, we're very easy to fool, you know, and they're the oligarchs in quotes. We know who they are. You know, they have like been able to come up with all these clever things and clever programs and workers' paradise, and we don't resist because for one, you know, we haven't been trained in thinking in this light, and two, we just don't suspect that. You know, because a lot of them are cryptos, we don't think, well, they wouldn't attack their own people, would they? I mean, yeah. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, they wouldn't really attack, you know, like, wouldn't deliberately do things that are genociding Europeans, would they? They wouldn't do that, would they? Well, I think they would. It depends on which kind of organization they belong to and which oaths they've taken, you know. I mean, Bill was a you know, what Demolay, you know, when he was a very young kid, age, you know, and he was like the head Demolay. We talked about this before, mm-hmm. but so they come out of these secret societies, less and less are needed because so many of the, you know, kind of like communities or secret societies, you know, where they just kind of live in little enclaves now. And so then they get into government, and now, you know, it's like, you know, like one thing I like look at and wonder about is like, well, all these politicians are pushing mandatory vaccination now, right? Mm-hmm. Which is just preposterous. I mean, just it's just on any kind of scientific level is insane, and yet they do it. So is this because they are, you know, I mean, are they in the secret society, the ones who are actually promoting it? That's something I really would like to find out. I think a lot of them are. You know, they wouldn't. They were just. It's just harder to believe they'd be that stupid. You know, to buy into this argument that there's some kind of benefit from mandatory vaccinations, because vaccinations is the, you know, I mean, once they have their capacity to inject us, and it's by law. Well, I mean, you know, Huxley is smiling in the grave. You know,
hear about the latest thing the CDC did.
Yeah, they want to get rid of breastfeeding.
Oh, that, yeah. But also they blamed higher rates of HIV AIDS death on traditional families, conservative, because the shame that it brings about, people, I guess, seeking treatment or early. Now, you know, I don't know, you've done a talk about HIV and AIDS, but it's just funny how the CDC again is promoting homophobia now, apparently, is causing AIDS.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, but you can see the attack is clear cut. Yeah. This is just they're trying every possible blow against heterosexual culture now that they can. They are just promoting homosexuality everywhere because it goes hand in hand with vaccines, right? You have the biologically weakened male with the cultural attack of, you know, heterosexuality is suspicious, it's optional, it causes, like, here's an example where
something like the CDC is supposed to be, you know, like a scientific agency, right? And it's gauging in sort of this speculative sociological theorizing about people's values about certain types of behaviors. Like, this isn't, first of all, this isn't even part of your mission. Second of all, this isn't your area of expertise. It's almost like when they had doctors asking children if there were guns in the house.
Yeah.
As if that was a health matter.
it's exactly like that. And, you know, it's like, when you see this, and obviously, you know, CDC is completely compromised organization. I mean, it just couldn't be more disgusting. But this is one of the reasons why I just don't go to doctors. I mean, if I had like a cut or something like that. But you know, you just cannot trust anything in there. It's just such a complete both cesspool and weaponized, you know, program to destroy people that you just, I just can't believe you wouldn't be better off just staying away from the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet everyone is like, I was looking at like the average American spends $9,000 a year on healthcare.
Yeah, we've done a show on that scam.
I know.
It's health. I mean, health is the norm. Health is what you are if you take care of yourself. If something happens, that's when you seek a physician or an expert. It's now assumed that everyone is unhealthy and they need constant prodding, poking, and, you know, and stabbing and taking drugs. I mean, it's just, it's amazing to me.
And in comparison to all these other nations, we have the worst health. Like, you know, health. I mean, by far the worst health. So the relationship between, you know, participation in the medical system and health was completely negative. So there is a real time rationale for just staying away from these quacks. I actually got into a shouting match with a doctor a while ago, just dressed him right down. I just told him he was evil and stupid, and that the Hippocratic Oath had been breached, and that he was an oncologist, and he was trying to justify radiation and chemo. And I just blew up. It's one of the reasons why, you know.
Who are these doctors that administer hormone treatments to transgender children?
Well, they're just anybody now coming out of a medical school.
Yeah, and they're able to keep their license? Think about that.
Well, even though this is obviously destructive, where is the, there are so few doctors that will stand up in that instance and say, you know, I am very not worried about the moral issue here. I'm just worried about the biological health side of this. So it's such an obvious concern. And yet the fact that not a single doctor that I'm aware of, and of course, if one did, perhaps the media would void that person. But I don't see any kind of organized protests. And this is all you need to know about the medical profession.
Yeah, there are a few. I was listening to one doctor. She was talking about so-called transgender. It doesn't exist. She says, you are born, it's either XX, female, XY, I'm sorry, yeah, XX, female, XY, male, right? Have that correct?
Yeah.
He says, humans, like all animals and mammals, they procreate sexually. There's male and there's female. Now, if someone claims that they are a male and they're a female, and they're in a, just because they say that, we wouldn't say they're transgender, we'd say they suffer from a psychological, some sort of, either they're being dishonest or some sort of a delusion. There's a body identity disorder where people think they're an amputee and they're not, I think. And it says that's still diagnosed as a psychological disorder in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. It should be categorized as such when someone does that. But she said, what she's saying is that, you know, this is the reality. It's a physical reality. Yet, you know, we're being told that someone can imagine themselves being something else, and you have to change fundamental reality to that. Some people are, teachers have been fired for misgendering somebody, you know, so.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's just an all-out assault on the heterosexual world, because that world is generative.
Yeah,
and they're trying to shift as quick as they can to the Brave New World model, where they are production of the children and control over the education, so that they will have the exact right level of intelligence and worldview in their sex slaves. You know, I mean that's basically where this all ends up. So,
the sex slaves will be saying we're free and we're equal.
Yeah. Are you know, and they'll have like the Stonewall Riot is one of the great triumphs in overcoming oppression.
Yeah, that's the big myth of all these groups, is they always have to overcome some sort of great oppression, so they can claim victim status and therefore moral superiority.
We overcame heterosexuality, the oppressive biological force that was just wrecking lives right and left. You know, yeah. So it's, you know, this isn't. Hopefully it just is because of the fact that they're so draconian and they're just so blatant about, there's no reason for a lot of the attacks on heterosexuality other than the Brave New World, right? You try to understand, well, what is their rationale? There isn't any rationale.
Yeah. You heard about Spokane, Washington, where they had a drag queen story hour, and there were 300 mothers showed up to protest. And the local authorities, police showed up with 40 officers and two SWAT snipers on the roof of the library to defend the drag queens from the mob.
So there it is. And then you look at that. So
unless you think the system, and you're a normie, and you think the system supports you.
Right. And I see, this is another, you know, it's like the guy who talked to McCarthy. Mm-hmm. Said, you know, you can see that there's a conspiracy, because if there wasn't, every once in a while we'd win one.
Yeah.
Think about that. Think about, when will the heterosexuals win one here?
Well, imagine if you're like one of the 40 police officers that were assigned to that. I got to do what today?
they're just automatons, you know, and it's part of the slave state.
They're waiting for their pension.
Wait, well, they're probably, you know, remember, they're all mandatory vaccinated, you know, they probably have limited intellectual powers, and they're getting indoctrination like five morning a week. They're just, I mean, they're literally like human robots. You know, it's like those of us that are free and biologically still human beings, we need to like bind together, you know, and we have to try to reach into just, you know, not small groups, but we'd have to try to, you know, connect somehow with like the how as they have connected with broad swaths of women, you know, with the cult of equality propaganda. We need to try to reach out and cut across that and say, look, this is a weapon. This is not, we have to show them that it isn't the, you know, European male and the white male privilege that is really the problem here. The problem is that there was a very small group of organized oligarchs that want to genocide you. And what you're being led into is the process of genocide. That's what this is. This is what, you know, feminism is. This is what the integration they have is. This is what the Brave New World is.
Mm-hmm. So okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, you know, happy 4th of July. Yep. And I'm so happy that we're on new platforms, and may freedom ring, because remember, you know, no refuge can save the hireling and slave.
Yes.
And the Star-Spangled Banner in triumph does wave. So,
so I have to declare my partial independence from YouTube. So.
Yeah, congratulations. All right,
okay. All right,
bye-bye.
Take it easy. Bye-bye. Thank you.